God is a God who provides, but He provides His way, not ours. God is a God who does provide, but when He provides, it's on His terms. It's His way, not ours. Maybe you're not like me, but when I get into struggles and trials and tribulations, I want the Lord to be there pronto. I want to end the struggle as soon as possible. I want the pain to stop 2 seconds after it started. That's my way. It's not His. When my bank account is low, I want Him to provide immediately. Not 2 weeks from now. But immediately is my way. It's not His. And when you and I run into situations in our lives where there's lack, or we need help from on high, God is a God who does provide. If you are in right relationship with Him, He has obligated Himself in certain things. He's on a hook. But when He provides and when He comes through, it's on His timetable. It's His way, not ours. And it is incumbent upon us to understand that, to allow our faith to grow, to stretch, and thus draw closer to the Lord. Exodus 16, there are six fundamental truths that are in play when God provides in time of need. In Exodus 16, as we go throughout, you'll see there are six highlights. There are six fundamental truths that we have to work with as God continues to reveal Himself to us today, as He revealed Himself to the nation of Israel back then. Let us begin. Exodus chapter 16, verse 1. I'm sorry, I didn't switch it over. I'll be reading from New American Standard. I believe you have the ESV. Pretty similar. Exodus 16, chapter 1. Then they set out from Elim, and all the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt. Look at verse 2. The whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. This is chapter 16. They complained in chapter 15, too, about water. This is 16. They complained in chapter 14, too. This is the third chapter in a row that the nation of Israel complained. And after 3 times, God said, it's time to address it. Now, I want to be very, very clear, because the scriptures are very specific in this regards. Here's a definition of grumbling. To murmur, or to mutter in discontent, to complain sullenly, to utter low, indistinct sounds, to growl, to express or utter with murmuring or complaining. That's grumbling. It's grumbling. Moses and Aaron, I'm not saying Moses. Aaron, he looks a little funny. And they grumbled. Verse 3, the sons of Israel said to them, now they're complaining, would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. two things real fast. They keep forgetting those whips in Egypt. They keep forgetting the fact that Pharaoh at one point said they were getting too many, so every male child that was born, take them directly from their mother's womb and throw them into the Nile as food for the crocodiles. They seem to keep forgetting these realities as they keep talking about how good they had it in Egypt. But here's the second thing. They had a legitimate concern. Let's not be too hard on them. They had a legitimate concern. They're out in the wilderness. There's no food. Moses, we have a legitimate concern. As a parent, it's hard to see my three-month child suffer. Hey, let's do this prayer thing and solve this. They had a legitimate need. Look at verse 4, then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day. Here's the, it is, that I may test them, whether or not they will walk in my instruction. On the sixth day, when they prepare what they bring in, it will be twice as much as they gather daily. Here's the first one. Here's the first principle. Lack may be a test from God. Lack may be a test from God. When your bank account runs low, maybe a test. When you look in your refrigerator for something to eat and all you see is the back of the refrigerator, lack of food, that may be a test. It was so for the nation of Israel. God knew there was a need there. If you find yourself in difficult situations because of relationships and there's something lacking, maybe a test. I said this before on other occasions. I remember when we were in college and we were trying to live for the Lord, the prayer amongst, I don't know about women, but amongst men, we were like, we need a godly girlfriend. And I could tell you, that lack, that was a test. As you struggle and continue to grow and to relate to the Lord and others, you may have legitimate needs. We all do. It's how you handle that lack. What do you do when there's more moth than money? What do you do? Lack may be a test from God. Look at verse 6. So Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, at evening you will know that the Lord has brought you out of the land of Egypt. 7. And in the morning you will see the glory of the Lord, for he hears your grumbling against the Lord. And what are we that you grumble against us? I.e., what are you talking about? Moses says, what are we that you grumble against us? We didn't part the Red Sea. What are you talking about us for? Lack may be a test from God. Here's the second one. Grumbling against God's leaders is grumbling against God. Grumbling against God's leaders is grumbling against God. Now, I want to be very clear. I'm not advocating blind obedience. That's David Koresh stuff. That's sick stuff. Blind obedience to any man is foolishness. What I am saying is grumbling against those who God has put to lead. Not complaining, not asking legitimate questions. If you can't go to a leader and ask questions, maybe it's time to find another church. Any Christian organization that will not entertain questions and legitimate concerns, there's a problem there. But that's not grumbling. Grumbling is, I can't believe this is that. Why did James do that? You know those women, they have that meeting tonight, but why did they grumble and never go to the person to what you have a problem with? Never recorded in 16 is, hey Moses, we're hungry. We need a little help. Grumbling against God's leaders is grumbling against God, not questioning. Grumbling. Look at verse 8. Moses said, this will happen when the Lord gives you meat to eat in the evening and bread to the full in the morning. For the Lord hears your grumblings, which you grumble against him. And why are we? You're grumbling not against us, but against the Lord. Then Moses said to Aaron, verse 9, say to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he has heard your grumblings. It came about as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the sons of Israel that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, verse 12, I have heard the grumbling of the sons of Israel. Speak to them, saying, at twilight you will eat meat, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Lord, your God. One, lack may be a test from God. Two, grumbling against God's leaders is grumbling against God. Here's three, God uses these times of lack to reveal himself. God uses these times of lack to reveal who he is. You see, if me and you, we go through our life and we have no problems, no struggles, where does God have an opportunity to show you who he is? If you are always happy, full, bank account flushed, that is the exact reason why Jesus says it is easier for a camel to go through a needle than it is for a rich man to see God. He has no lack. He's self-sufficient. Pride is ingrained. And it's hard for him to see who God is because he doesn't see the lack in his own life. Now you go to the poor, you don't have to convince them that there's lack. You don't have the hurdle of when you go to the poor that they need something outside of themselves. You don't have that problem. But those who lack, those who need, whether it be money, emotional help, mental help, problems, they need to cry out to the Lord. Those are the ones who know they're not self-contained. Those are the ones who know they need God. So when there is lack, when there is struggle, not if there's lack, not if there's trouble, when there's trouble, when there's lack, instead of complaining, maybe the more godly thing to do is, how can I see God in this? I'm hurting. Why am I hurting? And how can God step in? God uses these times of lack to reveal himself. Job, and all his wealth, in order for God to get Job where he wanted, he stripped him of everything. And then and only then could God speak to Job. And the way in which Job then says, I've heard about you, but now with my eyes I see you. God used these times of lack to reveal himself. Look at verse 13. So it came about at evening that the quails came up, covered the camp. And in the morning there was a layer of dew around the camp. When the layer of dew evaporated, behold, on the surface of the wilderness, there was a fine flake-like thing, fine as the frost on the ground. When the sons of Israel saw it, they said to one another, "What is it?" For they did not know what it was. And Moses said to them, "It is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. This is what the Lord has commanded. Gather of it every man as much as he should eat. You shall take an omer apiece according to the number of persons persons each of you has in his tent." Here's the fourth one. Obedience precedes blessings. Obedience precedes blessings. I am guilty, as I know many are, of praying a prayer like this: "Lord, if you just do this, then I'll do this. Lord, I know I'm not doing right, but if you do this, then I will." I'm here to tell you, God does not negotiate like that. He doesn't have to. Here's how I should go: "I will do this, and then please, out of your mercy, you do that." What we want is to make obedience easy or easier. I have seen the struggles. And who God is, he gets you to the point where you can't see how you're going to make it. That's where he wants you. Because he wants you to trust him more so than you trust your own eyes. He's got to get you to a point to where you are willing to obey, even if you don't understand. Look at verse 17. Obedience precedes blessings. The sons of Israel, verse 17, did so, and some gathered much and some little. When they measured it with an omer, he who had gathered much had no excess, and he who gathered little had no lack. Every man gathered as much as he should eat. Verse 19, Moses said to them, "Let no man leave any of it till morning." But they did not listen to Moses. And some left part of it until morning. And it bred worms and became foul. And Moses was angry at them. Here's the flip side. Not only is obedience precedes blessings, there's consequences for not following God's instructions. These people, figure out, the man is on the ground. "I know what you told me, gather an omer. But how do I know that flaky stuff is going to be here again in the morning? I don't know that. So here's what I'm going to do. I know you said gather only an omer, but I'm going to gather maybe two. Because what I want, just in case you don't come through, I want to eat. So I'm going to gather two, even though I know you told me only gather one." Some did that. And instead of manna, they had worms. Because God is teaching them a lesson. Obey me. If you don't, there's consequences. There's going to be a lot of worms in your life if you don't listen to me. If you don't trust, there's going to be problems. You're not going to hurt me, you're going to hurt you. And this lack, and this manner, and this traveling in the wilderness, it's all to mold Israel to a point to where they trust him. And ultimately, they get to Canaan, they look at the giants, and they don't trust them. And everybody above 20, God lays in the wilderness. You obey. You leave everything else to God, but you obey. You obey. It's a trust thing. It's a trust thing. Do you trust him? Do you believe that man is going to keep falling out the sky, Israel? You saw it once. Why won't I do it again? And over again, God makes these arguments all throughout scriptures. When you see me fail in my word, then you start questioning me. If I say I'm going to do something and I don't do it, then start questioning me. But so long as I keep doing everything I say I'm going to do, why question me? Why? And there's a point in my life when I was struggling, and I made that. I said, okay, God, when I see you fail at your word, then I'll start questioning you. When I'm out on the street and I have no food and my kids are hungry, then I'll start complaining again. There was one night in which I was complaining and the Lord dealt with me. He said, I'll make a deal with you, in so many words. When you're hungry on the street, then you have a right to complain. Until then, because I was complaining a little too much. I was grumbling a little too much. And I made a deal. Guess what? I've never seen him fail yet. As he brought Israel to this point, each and every one of us who call on the name of Christ, he's going to bring you to a point. Who are you going to trust? If I said I'm going to do something, do you believe I'm going to do it? When they gathered it morning and morning, every man as much as he should eat. But when the sun grew hot, it would melt. Verse 22, now on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for each one. When all the leaders of the congregation came and told Moses, then he said to them, this is what the Lord meant. Tomorrow's the Sabbath. Observe a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will bake and boil what you will boil, and all that is left over, put aside to be kept until morning. One day, they were to take two. And it just so happens on this one day, it would not gather worms. 24, so they put it aside until morning, and Moses had ordered, as Moses had ordered, and it did not become foul. Look, you can trust them. Nor was there any worms in it. Moses said to them, eat today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days, look at this. 6 days you shall gather it. But on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be no more. You're not going to gather it on the Sabbath. No manna will come on the Sabbath. You're not to work on the Sabbath to gain sustenance. Look at verse 27. It came about on the seventh day that some of the people went out and gathered. You still have people looking for it on the Sabbath. But they found none. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my instructions? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, he gives you bread for 2 days on the sixth day, Friday. Remain every man in his place. Let no man go out to his place on the seventh day. On the seventh day, you are not to work and gather. Here's the sixth one. The Sabbath is a sign of faith that God will provide. The Sabbath is a sign of faith that God will provide. I grew up in the South, and I can remember back in the 70s, on Sundays, the only thing that was open were gas stations. That's it. call them blue laws. Because down south, back then, you still had this consciousness about God. You had this faith in God that it was on Sunday. On Sundays, we were not to work. And as a nation, we said, collectively, we're going to trust God. Business will cease on Sundays. As we reflect and revel in all that God has done for us as a country. Gas stations, that's it. That's all. You couldn't go to Walmart. Target was closed. Because those businesses made a decision in their mind, we're going to trust God. And we're going to keep a Sabbath. Those days are gone. They're gone. Except for a select few. I'm aware that Chick-fil-A will not open on Sundays. Is that correct? It won't open. And there's been articles about that, the money they've saved and this and that, and how their sheets remain green and not red because they, as an organization, they've made the choice to trust God in their business affairs. And on that Sabbath, they cease. I'm also aware, I believe the Hobby Lobby also closes on Sunday, right? Closed. Because as an organization, they said, we will not trust and our business savvy. We're not going to work 7 days like everybody else does. We're going to cease and trust God and our money. The believer works 7 days a week. And I'm not saying that sometimes you're not supposed to work on Sunday. But at some point, your job must take second seat to your God. Has to be. At some point in your life, there are certain things you should hold back and honor God. If you're working 80, 90 hours a week because you don't trust that there's going to be enough money, there's a problem. Your trust is in the wrong place. I love you enough to tell you the truth. If you try to gather manna 7 days a week, it's a problem. On the flip side, I believe the Omer, the one, that is a warning against hoarding. People who hoard tend to do so out of a fear of lack. And so what they do is they pile up because I may need it. It's a lack of faith. It's a lack of faith. We all have problems, all of us. But it is incumbent upon us to understand that God provides, but he provides his way, not ours. Lack may be a test from God. Grumbling against God's leaders is grumbling against God. God uses these times of lack to reveal who he is and gives you an opportunity to trust him, to grow in your faith. Obedience precedes blessings. God's not into negotiating obedience. If you and I try to negotiate obedience, I'm telling you how God works. He will cease all negotiation. It's over. There's consequences for not following the Lord's instructions. And also, the Sabbath was assigned to Israel. Trust in God and not in your work. We all have problems in this area, I do believe. We all, unless you are perfect and you trust God perfectly, we all have problems in this area. I want to read this poem to you. It was made famous by a man named Ben Carson, who was in the news. Neurosurgeon, I believe, at Johns Hopkins for many years. And he tells the story about how his mother forced him to memorize this poem. Because there are many things in his life, and when trials and tribulations come in his life, his mother wanted him to have a certain mindset. You see, when people grumble, they're blaming others. Instead of looking within and recognizing that there's a lack between you and God, that somewhere down the line you don't have enough faith to trust in God Almighty. And we all need to do some reflection at some point. That's how we grow. But there's a mindset in the culture, there's a mindset in the news in which the chic thing to do is to blame everybody else. Never look at me. And Ben Carson, he says his mother's brilliant. I may make my sons memorize this, but it's brilliant because she wanted him to get a certain mindset. Here's how the poem goes. It's called Yourself to Blame by Mimi White Miller. If things go bad for you and make you a bit ashamed, often you will find out that you have yourself to blame. Swiftly we run to mischief, and then the bad luck came. Why do we fault others? We have ourselves to blame. Whatever happens to us, here is what we say. Had it not been for so-and-so, things wouldn't have gone that way. And if you are short of friends, I tell you what to do. Make an examination. You'll find the faults in you. You're the captain of your ship. So agree with the saying that if you travel downward, you have yourself to blame. If you find yourself in the midst of struggles and things aren't going well, do some self-reflection. God is gracious. His arms are ever open. Don't grumble. Look at it from God's perspective and grow. Let us pray.